This is David Zaslav. Welcome to Voices and Views V2.0 on KGPR FM 89.9 on your radio dial. Today, it's my great pleasure and privilege to welcome to our studios Ellie Weber from the Paris Gibson Square Museum of Art. Ellie, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, David.
Ellie, is it true you are the head of education at the Square?
Yes, for 6 more days, I am director of education at the Square. I've been here for over 3 years in the position.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. And what is your background and training? How does one get a job like that?
Well, so I started early on actually in special ed, elementary ed with a special ed endorsement, art ed endorsement, or art ed emphasis, I think is how they worded it then. Which are essentially sort of little minors attached to a K-12 degree. So that's where I started in education for my undergrad, and I did move a couple times. So I spent 1 semester in Missoula, and then I moved to Walla Walla, Washington, and played soccer at the community college there, and then moved back to Missoula. And in that sort of 2.5 years is when I switched my major, actually. So I was I'd done my observation hours. I didn't do my student teaching, and then I switched my major.
So you've been teaching for some time then.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is art education background in a lot of ways, where you're learning how to write curriculum, manage a classroom. And then I was working specifically in special education, which was near and dear to my heart and still is. And then I moved into a BFA, a Bachelor of Fine Arts route. So that opened up the opportunity to teach different levels, different ages. And that was presented to me actually when I was, in Walla Walla at a community college. One of my professors there was a lot of changes in our education system nationally at that time. No Child Left Behind was enacted and was the route that we were moving through standardized testing and things. And it was really impactful in the way that special education was being taught. And it wasn't quite aligned for me. So at a young age, I think I was 19 at that time or 20, I realized that maybe it wasn't the best fit. So that's why I switched to a Bachelor of Fine Arts, because having those conversations with professors, one of my professors said, if you just get your MFA, you can teach any age you want and any ability. And so that appealed to me because I knew at some point I'd want to get my master's anyways. And so that's when I switched to a BFA route. Then I moved back to Missoula and had to sort of start over. So I had a 7.5 year undergrad, David.
Wow. Well, that's almost, I guess that's a little longer than I spent at it, but
it's
not by
long.
Much.
It's long. And then after I finished in Missoula, I moved to Seattle and I did a ceramic residency at Pottery Northwest, which is the oldest arts center or arts organization in Seattle, and it's just a ceramic facility, so there aren't other media.
Now, when you say a ceramic facility, you don't mean a facility made out of ceramics.
No, I mean, okay. Some of the walls were mosaiced, pretty cool. It's a really amazing space that was part of the Seattle Center until really recently. A few years ago, they moved down into Pioneer Square, relocated. Actually, they were eminent domained by the city, which was pretty interesting to see a nonprofit that was that old have such a shift. And it really changes things when your location changes like that. So that was an amazing experience because for me, I got to be in my studio for 2 years, but I was teaching ceramic classes. That's where I really learned how to teach clay in clay. And then also you just get to be part of an urban setting in the arts. And Seattle has always been an arts city in a lot of ways. I mean, there have been a lot of changes the last decade since I was there and even since the pandemic, but it's still an art city. And I had always loved going to Seattle. So being there was impactful for me to see the nonprofit structure, how that can work, what a community art studio looks like, and how teaching in that is different than teaching academically, even K-12. So this is a long story already, David, I'm sorry. But then after Seattle, I moved to Kansas, and that's where I started my Master of Fine Arts. So it just was not the best fit for me. That program was in some transitions, but I taught a lot because that program was designed that grad students were instructors of record for 2 classes. So we taught 2 classes each semester, which is a lot. That's not very normal in most MFA programs. You might teach one, or you might even just be a TA.
To pottery classes or ceramics classes, or what kind of classes?
Yeah, good question. A lot of the times they're foundational art classes, so 3D fundamentals or 3D design. They have different names, but how to work in three dimension. Because I was a three-dimensional artist, those are the foundation classes that often we teach as grad students, but then also ceramic classes. So I taught, I think, two at Kansas, or maybe just one, because they're the instructor or the main professors. They teach a lot of the ceramic classes too. But they do want to give you that experience as a grad student to teach in clay academically at that level, so the college level academically. So that was amazing too, because it was a lot of teaching condensed into a smaller amount of time. But it wasn't the best fit for me, so I transferred also in grad school. And then I moved down to ASU, Arizona State University. In Kansas, I was at Kansas State University in Manhattan, and I had to pretty much start over also again in grad school. They took 12 credits, but it was still a three-year program. And then my thesis there was March 2020, so 2 weeks prior. The country shut down really with COVID, the onset of COVID. So I needed to extend so I could actually have my formal exhibition, because I'd built a pretty extensive installation that needed to be installed to be put together. So that's sort of the round of my education. Although within that, like in Arizona, I also taught in Community Art Center at Mesa Art Center, which is, I'm trying to think if they're a nonprofit actually. And they're not. They're an unusual. They're run by the city. It's a really cool, amazing art center part of Mesa that is taxpayer money. That's all owned, and you're technically a city employee there. But they have a contemporary art museum, a performing arts center. It's amazing. A gift shop, and then all these education classes and studio arts. So that was really impactful too, and actually is a lot of the reasons why in my position here, I started the Veteran Arts Program, is because I learned through Mesa Art Center how they started a veteran program at that art institution. And then I also worked with seniors in Arizona. I did a traveling pottery business I was part of. I was an employee of a really small business where we would pick up pottery, mostly bisqueware, slip cast, purchased things, and we'd take them to senior homes or group homes, and they would paint on pottery and then take them back to this woman's garage who owned the business and fire them in her garage. And that was a pretty special thing, because I really like working with seniors as well.
So what was the instigation of the move from Arizona to the heart of Western art country here in Great Falls?
Well, this is home. So for me, I've just wanted to get home. You know, early on, I really wanted to leave Montana, because I grew up here in Great Falls, and I did want to see different things and be in different regions of the country and explore the world, even if I could eventually. But the education really shifts depending on where you're at in this country. And I sort of understood that pretty early on going into art ed, or just education in general, that friends that were in different programs around the country, or people that you meet, things are done differently. All programs are done differently. So for education, that was really important for me. I really wanted to go through education outside of Montana. But then after being away for not long, you know, home always is calling, and this is home. And so I've been trying to get home for pretty much since grad school, and knowing that really through grad school, my route was back to Montana, because I hope to live most of my life here.
That's wonderful. So to analogize clay to education, we could say you've spent a long time in the kiln.
Yeah, I mean, so long. It's actually kind of funny when people figure out, they're like, you did 7.5 years of undergrad and then you did 5.5 years of grad school. Like, that's a long time in school. But I'm a little stubborn maybe, but that's the negative side of that connotation. But
no, that's the Montana side of that connotation.
Maybe, thank you. Yeah, maybe so. Because what I think about a lot is when something's not the right fit for me, I want to push through to what is. Because I have goals and I want to try to achieve those goals on the personal side of that. But also when something doesn't feel right, or it's not what I'm looking for, then there are other routes out there. So I like to change pace if I need to.
And a lot of us don't have the ability to introspect that way and say, am I on the right course? Am I doing something that's furthering my my trajectory towards a larger goal? They live day in, day out. They don't think in those terms. And the fact that you've done that so many times, right, gives me a sense that you are on a good path.
Thanks. It's hard, though. And it takes a lot of listening. I think, I should have left Kansas earlier, and I tried to. I knew pretty quickly that it was not a good fit for me. And you have to apply. Typically, grad applications in the arts are November through February. So in November, you're only 2.5 months into your program. But I knew already. I was like, it's not really the right fit. So I did seek out feedback or advice or conversation with mentors and family and friends. And a lot of people were like, it's just grad school. It's hard. And I was like, no, I don't think so. So I didn't apply my first year. And then I really knew. So then I had to decide, do you wait? Do you stay? I'd moved across the country. So do you stay and keep trying to fix it? And that's sort of my mentality. But then, yeah, it's still not right. So make a shift. So that's why I spent 2 years there. But had I listened maybe a little or trusted earlier? Yeah, those are good lessons in our lives.
The fact is you got there. Mm-hmm. You got there eventually. So when one of your students asks you for some foundational knowledge, like maybe perhaps our listeners might need, for example, defining what we mean by Western art, representational versus outsider art versus abstract art. How do you define those terms for people so that they can better appreciate what they see at the various museums in Great Falls?
Yeah, so Western art, in the general context of art, we think of Western art really as anything made in the Western side of our world, on the globe. So that can include European art. It does in that context. And it goes back really to classicism and onward. But here in America and in this side of the country, we define Western art in a lot of different ways, where we're thinking more recent, the past two centuries maybe instead. And how art is made is sort of a perception of our surroundings. So it has to do a lot with landscape or wildlife, but then also culture too. So indigenous peoples being represented or cowboy culture and how those things overlap. So Western art in this part of the country is really a niche definition, I would say. And we, having the Charlie Russell here is amazing because it's such a renowned international Western art museum, and he as a Western painter is really renowned. But it is really specific, because if you even are in Idaho or Washington, that might be defined a little bit different than those of us who live in Great Falls or grew up here would define Western art. And so there are a lot of layers, with colonialism and things, when we have to think about appropriation. And those are things I am interested in that conversation a lot. But ultimately, a lot of it is how are we occupying space? How are we all residing in the same landscape? And how has culture changed over time? Or what is the human impact or the human relations over time with that land and with each other?
So the definitions become somewhat fluid over long periods of time and can change.
Yeah, I think it does change. And that's, even in the movements of art, we're in contemporary art right now. And that's been the case since modern art. So we've had this long run of contemporary art. And in the field of art, we don't really know how to define that. It's sort of this giant melting pot. It's like everything goes. It's all of the mediums and all of the past movements sort of blending together. But then also using, how does technology now have an influence on the arts, and how is light coming back in as a media? So though it is fluid, it's really fluid. And sometimes it's because there's so much information, it's hard to define these things. So I think sometimes regionally here, we define Western art a little bit narrower. And that's just the niche of what we understand or what we're really being exposed to. But representational art is similar. Like that can just be that you're you're representing something from life. It can be really generalized that way, that you're representing a landscape or you're representing a human figure. Outsider art is different in the sense that outsider art is typically, that one's a little more succinct maybe in how people define that one. It as being that an outsider artist is somebody who's not traditionally trained typically. But there's new conversation about that definition, because a lot of the times when you see that actually in a dictionary, it might use words like naive or innocent.
Untrained.
Yeah, untrained, like yeah. Things that have stigmas or stereotypes that are attached to them that are trying to be broken down as we are evolving our language so much right now, the last several years, which is wonderful, I think, in a lot of ways. But it becomes tricky when definitions change and become fluid. Sometimes we don't know where to land.
I would have to say one of my own personal epiphanies and what I observe from younger patrons at the square, walking into the room with the steen stick figures mm-hmm. is typically one of the most dramatic moments in anyone's first trip to the square. And that, I guess, is representational, outsider, and Western.
Yeah, that is interesting. It's definitely outsider, definitely Western. I think most people would classify that. But representational is interesting on that one because, yes, it is representing people or characters, but they're not true to life. They're not exact mimicry or pure representation proportionately or something. They're stick people.
So and a representational artist is doing his best to try to be realistic. Is that how we would think about it?
Well, that's where that one is fluid because, yeah, some people are hard and fast. Like representational is just what you see and it's as exact as what you're seeing. So photorealism would be an extreme, not an extreme, but an example of that version. Versus representational with Lee Steen, they're still representing humans or these characters. But some people might say, though, but that's abstraction. And it is.
Not quite as abstract maybe as a woman drawn by Picasso.
Yes.
Which you really have to work to see where's the head, where are the eyes. But it's still, in a sense, abstract because it's not the actual person depicted.
Yeah. And not as abstract as a Rothko, which is planes of color. So I think of a lot of words in general and definitions, but also a lot of things in life metaphorically too. They're all on, there's spectrums of how we place things.
So where on this sort of multidimensional map do you consider yourself as an artist when you produce something down in the basement at the square?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting too to think about because I don't feel my job has been so busy helping organize and create opportunity for other art making that I haven't been making myself too much the last 3 years, which is I'm excited for that coming up for myself. So in a lot of ways, when I'm making in the context of a community art center, I'm typically an instructor. So I'm making things in the context of showing technique or process. But overall, generally, the way I would place myself as an artist in making my own work is that I'm more abstract for sure. I'm less representational. I'm not that interested in, I like, for example, like still life drawing. That doesn't feed me. I am interested in exploring things that are more abstract in general. And then how do I turn those into something that is an object or an installation? And so I sort of start from abstraction in my ideation anyways. So I think that naturally lends my work to look a little more abstract. So there are references to things like the flower has been a really big point of my imagery or symbolism in a lot of my work the last even 5 years, really. But sometimes you're like, is it a bouquet? Is it like a creature? Is it candy?
What species of flower is that?
Yeah.
But walk us through, for example, your recent exhibition out of state and anything else around Montana. But I know for a fact that you went back to Arizona and were featured as an exhibited artist. And maybe walk us through what those were and how those fit on this spectrum.
Yeah. So When I first moved here, I did have some things on my docket because I knew I had some experience in understanding nonprofit. I'd never been on the admin side of nonprofit like I am now, but I'd seen that. So I knew, and I'd been told by some mentors, like, you're not going to have much time in the studio. So for me, foresight, I was like, okay, just if I get some things on the docket, then I have to. So one of those was a solo show down in Phoenix. The background kind of is that part of that show happened actually because of COVID and my thesis being sort of up in the air. I applied for this as a solo show as a backup in case I couldn't actually do my thesis in the end, because at the time the university just did not know how to deal with this. And if people were staying, what do we do? And how do we build our exhibition calendar? So I had applied for this solo show down at Phoenix College, and they have a really neat little, it's a nice art program. I mean, beautiful facilities. So I knew some of the people that had worked through there, and I had always, I've been interested since I lived in Phoenix. It's a nice gallery. So I threw out an exhibition proposal really for my thesis. And then when I got it, that was great. And it had about a year out, which is pretty standard. And then I got my exhibition for my thesis. So it gave me the opportunity to make totally new work. And it happened my first winter back, maybe not quite, maybe a year in almost, because it was winter time when I went down. And so I left some work in Phoenix with some friends that I knew, oh, I'm going to use this work that I'd never shown, but it was part of series that led to my thesis. And so when I was here, I just expanded on that work. And I made all these collages, like maybe 400 of them. They're using mat board scraps, so waste mat board. I use a lot of found object as waste, things that would maybe be at the end of their life cycle or deemed so. But then I try to think about their footprint and how can they be changed into something else. I think about that a lot in my work, like what is the footprint of the work? How does that evolution sort of continue forward? And so I was using all these mat board scraps and I was back collaging. So I'd cut out these shapes that created sort of a window, and then I'd back collage them. So collage from behind. And then all of those little shapes that pulled out were really interesting. And they were these sort of mirrors, or this opposite, this sort of yin and yang, the shadow and light. And so I used all of those to make a sort of quilt. It's not really a quilt, but this influence of the quilt, I'm really interested in the domestic space and how, and women's work, these layers of that in the home. And so I made all these cyanotype prints that gridded into the wall that looked like sort of a monumental quilt when they were hung. And they were the negatives of the collage, but then they became positives on the cyanotypes. And then when I went into put this installation together, it was a lot of hours in an installation in Montana. My flight got canceled, so I ended up having this really wild install, just like a kind of a 48-hour push, and had some friends come in. And when I was in there, I had all of the cutouts. I'd brought them with me. Because with a cyanotype, you're just using that as a stencil in the sun, essentially. And then you still have them. And so in the space, I ended up using them on the walls. That ended up being kind of goofy, but it was really fun to think about three layers of the same shape as an image and how they are playing off of each other. And I was thinking a lot about the sun and light and shadow, so this dark and light. And so the show is called Sunflowers in two separate words. And I had this large carpet in the center of the room with Palo Verde blossoms, which is the state tree of Arizona. And I'd been collecting them for 3 years when I lived down there, and I hadn't really used them. I used a little bit in my thesis show, but I had this huge barrel of all of these beautiful dried yellow blossoms. So they became sort of this connection point in all that work.
And 400 hangings later, you had your exhibition.
Yeah, it was... My living room still has them on the floor currently, actually, because the way that I had to pack them up, I hadn't fully unpacked them. So I was part of Great Western Art Show this last winter, which was really fun to be part in that context where I place myself not as a Western artist at all, But I'm darting a little here, but back to this idea of generalization, you know, Western art could also just be like any artist who's making art in the West. So in a way, that's a fun thing to think about. Where are you placing yourself in these contexts? So for that show, I ended up framing quite a few of them. And so now I have a whole lot of them framed and I'm moving through the rest of them, just documenting them. But actually what I'm going to do is there'll be one of my new series coming up is that I'm pulling out those that look like sculptures to me. In a lot of ways, collage for me is a study. It's a way that I draw or create studies for other projects or pieces. And so as I've looked at them again now in unpacking them to repack them in a little bit of a safer way and sorting where are they going to different galleries or things, I'm like, oh my gosh, these are sculptures. So that will be a new series for me coming up as I'm going to turn them into ceramic sculptures.
That sounds great. Now, so if one of my listeners is thinking, gosh, I guess I have to go down to the square to see this, is that true? Or is there somewhere else or a Google search they could enter to see what it is we're talking about? Like, say they never heard of a cyanotype before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you Google cyanotype, you'll learn a lot about that. It's a sun print is what that means. So it's treated chemically, fabric or paper, and then you expose it to the sun. And it's a kind of photo printmaking technique. It sort of bounces between those two areas.
But as far but as for your
my,
work.
Yeah, I have a website. It's just ElizaWeber.com because my name is actually Eliza, but most people know me as Ellie here.
ElizaWeber.com.
ElizaWeber.com. I'm slowly updating it still, but Sunflowers, that show's on there. My thesis show is on there.
Serves as a potential visual aid to this discussion where we are, after all, on the radio. And so I can't just say, now look at this. This is what we're talking about. You'll have to do that research for yourself at home.
Yeah, I'm trying to get back on Instagram a little bit more, too, because it is a lot of the way that artists are connecting.
As Eliza Weber?
Yeah, it's _ Eliza Weber. There's another Eliza Weber out there. Oh. So it's at _ Eliza Weber.
_ Eliza Weber. Okay. So would you say, having done all of this in these different regions of the country, would you say that Great Falls is still an important stop on the American art scene?
Yeah. Yes. I think everywhere is. That is my interest as not just a maker, but a patron of the arts and a celebrator of the creatives of the world, that I am so interested in looking at the diversity of work and how it changes, no matter if it's in a really tiny town, smaller than us, like Latigo and Lace as a gallery we have here out of Augusta versus the Met, you know, these huge differences. They're all important because all of them are putting together how we are living in a space and within a culture. It's one person's view, maybe, one person's expression of that. But yeah, I mean, also, yes, Great Falls is definitely on the map for Western art. The Charlie Russell is wonderful. But we are also the only contemporary art museum as Paris Gibson Square in North Central Montana. And it's an amazing, the building and the history of the education in that building is just incredible. It's so beautiful, but the exhibitions that come through are wonderful. They're impactful. They make you curious and question, and they give you a lens of some of the history of work that's been produced here. Because part of a lot of the mission is about supporting regional artists through Paris Gibson Square, contemporary regional artists. So you see work that's being made from maybe modern 60s, 70s and onward. And that's really fun to see how the work has changed, but how that influence is still shared.
That's right. And I would encourage anyone in the listening audience to go to the Electron on kgpr.org's website, because there you will find detailed listings and links to all of the exhibitions on the walls at the Paris Gibson Square Center, as well as some of the other museums around town. So if you're interested in checking out the art scene in person or via website, you can actually find those events and exhibitions online at kgpr.org/electron.
So, yeah, thank you for doing that, by the way, David, because it's amazing to have that community calendar of events that are going on in Great Falls. There's a lot going on here. Not just in the arts, but in general.
In general. And it was hearing people after 5 or 6 years complaining that there wasn't anything happening in Great Falls that made me think, well, that's not true. Yeah. I just think maybe people don't know where to look now that there isn't a hot ticket pull out of their newspaper every Friday. So yeah. I thought, where could we look for that? Right. And I approached KGPR's board of directors and they authorized me to put it on the website of KGPR.org as a public service platform for event finding.
It's really awesome. Yeah, thank you.
But art is not the only thing, as we've said, that goes on at the square. There's also a thriving educational curriculum or set of curricula. Tell us about what one would find weekly at the square now and or after you leave town, and that one could take advantage of to learn and practice and become an artist.
Yeah. Okay. So we have quarterly classes, which run on a seasonal schedule. So our summer will start in June. We're typically sort of first week of January's winter. They run about 6 weeks. Then we move into first week of April for spring, and then first week of June for summer, first week of October for fall. So that's sort of the standard calendar annually for quarterly classes on a 6 week schedule. But within that, you might have 1 day workshops to a class that meets every night for 3 hours. It's like a ceramic pottery class. And the mediums are pretty expansive. We have drawing and painting and ceramics, sometimes some sculpture. Typically that would be in clay, often as a media as well. Printmaking. And our jewelry program is just a little bit in transition right now, too. But we had a really wonderful jewelry program with instructor Craig Williams, too, until recently. And he passed. So that program has just been a little bit on pause and hope to get that one going again. And then textiles. So we've brought textiles in, too. So we don't have photography currently or haven't for a few years, but we really span most media. So, and then specialty workshops will happen too. There might be creative writing or soul moves with Julia Becker doing somatic movement. So they change every quarter. I'd just encourage you to take a peek. We call that studio arts education because you're making art in a studio.
I'll plug the somatic dance,
yeah,
or somatic movement, because I call it dancing without rules.
True.
And it's a lot of fun. And you actually can get a pretty good workout out of that hour.
Yeah. And healing if you're looking for that too, or connection. So, yeah, it's a really interesting way of moving through space. And then we have 5 free art programs. So some of those are weekly, like our teen program called the Curative Art Collective. That meets every Tuesday throughout the year from 5 to 7 p.m. Our senior art class meets every Tuesday afternoon from 1 to 3 p.m. We have an Adults with Disabilities program that's mostly a partnership with Easter Seals Goodwill. And that's a trimester. So it links up with our winter, spring, and fall quarters, and we pause in the summer. And that one is wonderful, where clients will come on Tuesdays to the museum and do clay or 3D works. And we now go to the day center on Wednesdays and do mixed media. And then we have all the third graders from the school district still come through on tours in the winter months. And then our newer program is the Veteran Arts Program. And that program it's 2 years old. It will be 3 actually in October already. And it meets every other Wednesday evening from 5 to 7. So there are weekly opportunities if anyone out there knows people or you yourself fit into any of those categories, then all that information's on the website under education, and they have their own tabs.
And by veterans, we mean current or past servicemen and women?
Past, yeah. So those who are classified, not active duty. So all veterans, yeah. And Great Falls surrounding area. So we partner with the Vet Center in a way that they create a training annually for our instructors, and that's required of our instructors to go through. Just some extra tools in the tool belt there on how teaching in that classroom may differ from teaching in other classrooms. Really, every form of teaching is sort of can be really niche depending. So working with adults with disabilities is very different than working with teenagers, for example. All those programs are different. So the Veteran Arts Program, yeah, we have this wonderful relationship with the Vet Center, and their licensed counselors or outreach coordinator will come to the museum if we need them for something. or some extra support. And then they're a great resource for the veterans too, to just be able to share what other resources are available to them personally or socially, collectively, because they have some really cool programs themselves.
But if I'm not taking advantage of one of these, let's call it community service outreach programs, what kind of budget do I need to take advantage of one of these classes on the basis you were talking about?
Oh, good question. Yeah, so the free art programs are free. The quarterly classes, they can range in price from $50 to $225, depending on a 1 day, maybe to a 6 week workshop. But we have scholarships, so that's really important. Part of our programming is that we want to create access to everyone. And our scholarship program is supported by the Roberta Cooney Memorial Fund. And that Roberta Cooney lived here in Great Falls and was a ceramic artist and a belief painter. And her family's continued that on in her memory to help others be able to create art and have those opportunities of expression themselves. So generously, they support the scholarship fund every year. We definitely have other people that will want to restrict a donation to scholarships, and it's really helpful because our scholarship requests have grown significantly the last 3 years. So we have sort of a queue, and you can find the application online under education, under scholarships, or you can call the museum or pop in and we'll give you an application. And they just we just go down sort of in order of when they come in and try to pair you with the right class or workshop you're interested in on full or partial scholarships. We currently just give one per year per person so that we can really spread that funding around.
But the bottom line is, if you have an instinct or a desire to create, then you'll probably find an outlet that you can afford and a class you can afford at the square.
Yeah, and we want to help you be able to get in and take some classes too. There's an amazing community in the education department down there. The overall community is wonderful, and Great Falls' community is wonderful. But it's interesting when you get into these art centers, or as a nonprofit even, or any art center, that the community that's built in studio art classes or the free art programs, they're really amazing to see the friendships that grow out of there and the ways that people support each other creatively and way beyond that as well.
So, and in addition, I've stumbled across, or I should say I've stumbled upon, a couple of your classes, especially the Tuesday evening classes. Would you be willing to give us some stories of impact that you've had on those that have come to your classes and also on yourself?
Yeah. Oh, yes, there are amazing moments that happen, and a lot of them can be really small, and some of them are nonverbal, the moments where you see these aha moments that teachers talk about, when you're in a room and you watch something click for someone. It's so powerful. It really is impactful to watch critical thinking click in and problem-solving skills advance an idea. Or someone achieve a goal that they didn't think, I never could have thrown a 5-inch bowl. And then they easily are throwing 7-inch bowls. And so those moments are really, really impactful. And they happen all the time, every single day. There are special moments, and some, I'm trying to think of some to share on air. But in the Adults with Disabilities program, like I had my last class with them on Wednesday. And just the way that those relationships can deepen in working with people, all people, for a length of time. You get to know each other, and you get to know how you can support each other, how you can create that curiosity or feed it into some form of expression. So the projects that come out of there where you have the discussions of, what is this? And the ideas that are there that maybe we don't see because it's not purely representational, it might be slightly abstract. And moving through grief or joy, hope, it's really amazing. I think some in our teen program, we can really tell in a lot of ways that just having a safe space weekly is very impactful for a lot of the teens that are coming. Food, having a good meal. We don't always make a good meal. Sometimes we just snack it out, we say. But having food and how food brings people together and creates conversation, that's really impactful. And what we've, a lot of the impact out of the teen program has been through collaboration. So doing the mural at Alliance for Youth, we just did a painting for Pacific Steel and Recycling for their headquarters here because they sponsored the program this year. And Exchange asked for a representational image as a painting of their main building. And that took about 5 months for the teens to complete because, and they'd never worked in oil paint. So the way that you're teaching technique or process, but also how to collaborate and how to work through something, how to stay committed to something until you get to the other side and the reward on that other side. And then in the veteran program, I think there's been some really wonderful feedback on how also community and connection and outlets has been, like, the just having some socialization that is, and fun, having fun, but learning something new, coming back to something, a skill that maybe somebody had learned a little bit in high school or college, or just self-taught, had drawn a lot as a child, to come back and turn that into an etching, a copper etching. So I'm not giving you any really specific examples, David, but it's amazing. And then in the quarterly classes, watching the students that are there all the time, and making, I have a student from a recent class that's finishing up on Monday, and she's never taken a clay class. And so the goal was to get her into the beginning throwing class, but they fill up pretty quickly, and she wanted to take it with her mother-in-law. So ended up just saying, come into my intermediate advanced class. And we did hard projects. We did a proportion project where you're mimicking an ancient vessel in proportion. And she rocked it out, first time ever in clay. And that is so fulfilling for me to see that she pushed through the stress and frustration and learned so much. And then it has made this incredible piece.
So a little persistence goes a long way when it comes to learning.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's really wonderful. I'm imagining a whole lot of boxes of tissues have been used up as you've been winding up these classes and saying goodbye to these teams and groups that you've been interacting with for so many years now.
Yeah, not too many, but I think it'll come later. You know, it was really hard to say bye on Wednesday to Easter Seals Goodwill. And I look forward to visiting because that's a different program. And some of the clients that I've just gotten to know in the last 3 years, and I really have love for these. I have so much love for the students. We've had so many students come through the square. I think in our quarterly classes, just in the time I've been there, we've had over 800 individuals as students in the quarterly classes. And I've interacted with many of them, because even just popping in and seeing them, or I see their names come through in the registration. And then all the students, we've had about over 30 in our senior art program, maybe 20 in the teen program. Over 50 veterans have come through the program, and we've worked with about 35 different individuals at Easter Seals Goodwill. So it's a lot of impact on my life and how the individuals that I've met coming home here, because a lot of them I didn't know prior. And then to reconnect with people that, or people I went to school with and their kids now come. So those full circle things are really wonderful. And yeah, so I don't plan to be totally gone. I hope to stay connected with many, many people.
We sure hope that too. But now describe for us this new thing, this artist residency that you're moving into as you depart from Great Falls. What is that all about, and how long will it be, and what will you produce as a result?
So I feel very fortunate that I got a long-term residency at the Archie Bray Foundation in Helena, which is a one-year renewal. So it's typically a two-year residency. And residencies for fine artists are opportunities, typically a studio space, and you just make your work. I mean, there are other layers to that too. Sometimes, you know, on finding other ways to work, have a teaching job or something, but ultimately, the goal of a residency is to have artists in their studios making their work, and in a way that's very focused, and it's most of the time that they're spending is there as a working artist. So the Bray is wonderful. It's amazing. It's renowned, I'm still like, pinch me. I think when I walk in, I'm going to be like, whoa, pinch me, because I'm like, they chose a Montana girl. they have a big following and bring in a lot of artists internationally. And it's been something that I've had as a goal of mine, a dream, but a big one of those big goals for 15 years since undergrad, since really learning about it and starting to participate and going to workshops or going to their events. So I am, yeah, starting first week of June, and we have a busy summer ahead, and we just make. There will be a lot of us on site this summer, actually, because they're switching the calendar. So there are 5 long-term residents every year, and then you're usually there for 2 years, and then they bring in 5 summer residents. So this summer, they're switching their calendar. So this summer, there will be almost, I think, 20 of us on site, which is great, because the other amazing thing about a residency is the Bray has such a wonderful reputation in the field of ceramics and beyond that they really help you kind of launch your career. Part of that is just through reputation and exposure, proximity to that. But also they really want to help you be able to make it as an artist. How do you live as an artist? And the other side of that, though, is who you work with, your peer group that you get to go through, the professionals that you work alongside. You learn so much from each other, not just in the process of making things and the shared material, but also the business side of things, the networking. So, and then friendships are built. So that's a really wonderful side of residencies too, is all that collaboration that even could come out of that.
You don't expect to fall out of touch with those folks for a long time after the residency's over.
Yeah, you get pretty close to the people you move through residencies with. I am pretty close with quite a few people that I was in Seattle with. And it's a really special time in your career to be able to do that. So I feel very fortunate to be able to say, okay, the next 2 years are a focus on me and my work. And then you look at all the things of what are your intentions with that and what are your goals? Where do you want to go with that? So those are big questions because I haven't ever had that time in my life. Grad school is a lot of that. You have so much time in the studio, but also you're in classes and you're researching. And so I'm really looking forward. I come from a brain that likes academia. I'm very curious. I'm interested in research. And so I'm really excited to go back into the research side of it too, to have that time to connect with people in the field or not in the field. I also have a short-term residency called Open Air, which is a really wonderful program that was started by a gal that I went to undergrad with, actually. It's about 5 years old now, and they're a nonprofit in the state too. They pair artists in more non-traditional spaces for 1 month at a time and provide your housing to just be able to make for a month, but often in spaces that maybe you traditionally wouldn't be in. So I'm going to the Flathead Lake Biological Research Station in October, mostly the month of October. And so I'll get to work with the scientists and researchers on site there, which is really exciting to me because that's research I wouldn't have access to. I'd be trying to figure that out on my own in part of my work where I want to be studying native plants, but I'm using like the Palo Verde blossoms down in Arizona, I've been using local plant material or other fiber material and turn it into paper pulp. And so I'm really excited to be able to work with scientists in the state that is what they study, our ecosystems. And so being able to talk about harvesting and invasive species and turning that into an art material.
It's really amazing. So as you leave Great Falls this month, next month, to take up this residency, what advice do you have for those of us who are carrying on as the creative citizens of Great Falls?
Mm-hmm.
How can we best maintain and grow as a city?
What I see about Great Falls, having moved back and seeing Missoula as such an art hub as a city, and partially because I have community there, being someone who went through undergrad there and a lot of the people have stuck around. What I see about Great Falls is there's so much potential, so much potential. There is room for a ton of growth. There is a lot of interest. I mean, our wait lists for the ceramic classes for beginnings are huge. They're unsustainable, honestly, because we just don't offer enough classes and the space isn't big enough to offer how much interest there is. So that's so exciting to me as somebody who teaches in the arts, but also somebody who sees the potential of Great Falls kind of blooming in its creative outlets still, or opportunities, that there is just a ton of potential and interest. There are a lot of people who want to learn how to make things, how to express themselves, how to connect, but also there are a lot of people who have the skills to provide spaces and opportunities for that. So I would say, I don't know if I have advice so much, David, but just continuing to be a part of these spaces. And I think a big key where we're at as a city is through collaboration, because the cost of living's gone up in Montana. It's harder for artists sometimes to afford things. So you have to team up. And I think one of the things about Montana that one of the reasons I love this state so much is that even when we maybe have differing opinions or views, we often still can figure out ways that we can come together and find mutual understandings or foundations. And that is a huge benefit in how we could grow in the arts in this city, is that if people team up, and the arts can be so competitive, they can be just honestly cutthroat in some ways. But Montanans, or people who are attracted and live here, I think come from a place that is more collaborative. And so remembering that, that when successes happen, that actually we want to support each other too, because that's really impactful. And that's how we all grow, is that if we are elevating each other, it actually elevates us as well. And the arts, expanding our viewpoint on the arts maybe too, because yes, we have a contemporary art museum. I'm working at the Contemporary Art Museum, but we also have this amazing Western. So how do those contexts overlap and not collide? How do they all become informative? And then how do we support the music? How do we support dance? How do we support what is in general, back to these definitions of where we started? How do we broaden all those definitions and come from a place of curiosity more so than what we think we know, I think is important too.
So it would be fair to say that as the city enters its phase of re-examining its growth plan through the city planning director, mm-hmm. that it might be a good idea to include one or more artists and musicians on that committee to make sure that we're incorporating that sense of potential spiritual growth as well as collaboration within Great Falls?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think diversifying the decision, the people who are part of decision-making in most spaces, is the healthiest thing. Having people blend together from different experiences and backgrounds, economic statuses, religious backgrounds, all of these things help us actually create more opportunity for all. Because where the arts are moving nationally right now, there's a really high focus on DEI work, or DEIB work, so diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, or equity. And so, or I just said that, access versus belonging. So those two will kind of interchange a little bit. Essentially, that is just making sure that everyone is provided opportunity. And that takes work. It takes work, and it takes restructuring a lot. And it takes being curious and open-minded, versus that's kind of what I mean by coming through decisions that way versus what we think we know. And that is really important, that if we have more voices at the table, that, to be so cliche right now, then our viewpoints open up, though. It's true. So yeah, that would be, I would agree with that, David. Mm-hmm.
That's good advice. That counts as advice, I think.
Maybe so, yeah.
Ellie, a.k.a. Eliza Weber, it's been a real treat and a pleasure having you here in the KGPR studios for Voices and Views V2.0. We thank you so much for your time, and we wish you really good luck and a lot of growth in your new venture.
Thank you so much. This was a great conversation, and I'm not going too far, anyone, or for too long. This is home. So I look forward to staying really connected in Great Falls and the arts and just the community in general.
And Helena's not that far away.
Mm-mm, not at all. It's a lovely drive. I think it's becoming my second favorite drive in the state.
Thanks again. This is David Sasloff for Voices and Views V2.0 on KGPR-FM 89.9 on your radio dial. Stay tuned for more Talk Tuesday coming up right now.